with us on a journey into the unknown, the unexplained, and the unbelievable. We will test your senses and challenge your beliefs. A world where science and religion clash. Or do they? You will meet real people and hear real stories, but you will not believe. You will witness strange sights and hear strange sounds, but you will not believe. This is the New England Ghost Project. Welcome to the nightmare.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the fabulous Ghost Chronicles International Show, starring the Van Helsing of New England, Ron Kolick, and his lovely co-host, the bald bombshell himself, Steve Parsons.
Good evening. Hey, I'm going to move to Texas.
I know you should. Texas is.
I'm going to get a truck with a gun rack and shoot stuff.
Yeah. Hey, you want to hear something weird? I heard a ghost hunter got a gun.
No, really?
Yeah.
Another one?
So
another ghost hunter. What you're trying to say is, because you were alluding to it before. You said you wanted. Yes, I got a new gun.
Yes, I got a new gun. So
now, can we move on now?
No, because
I ain't in Texas. I don't have a truck, although I do have an SUV, and I ain't got a gun rack. Well, not the truck. Flag? I haven't got a Confederate flag either. I've got a British flag.
Yeah, cool though. Confederate flags are cool.
Yeah, the British flag's very cool as well.
It is, because it's very similar in reality.
Yeah, except it's not cool in Britain. Because everybody's flying Palestinian flags at the moment.
Probably.
Weirdly.
Yeah. So the, the ghost hunter with a gun, so you take it ghost hunting. And so if like a silver bullets kill werewolves, what would kill ghosts? Pretty Hard says already dead, but that's another story.
Yeah. Invisible bullets?
Invisible bullets. So blanks. You just scare the hell out of them.
Imaginary bullets. There you go. No, just empty cartridge cases. You'd like be like ghost bullets.
Yeah, and they'll be looking for holes in themselves, and they'll spend the rest of the time not bothering you.
You've killed me. No, you're dead already.
Oh, but if I was alive, I'd be dead.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll it's like that.
It reminds me of, I did an interview once. It was on Most Haunted.
Just once?
No, one time. And, well, it was one time. No, on Most Haunted. And they said to me something about, do you believe in an afterlife? And I said, well, if I wake up and find myself, if I die and then wake up and find it's final, I'll be pissed.
You'll be pissed?
Well, I've always wanted to be a ghost.
Oh, really?
Well, the thing is, I am, and like you, and like...
Cat can put you in a jar and sell you on eBay.
Well, they already sell ghost farts on eBay.
Oh, God. Go ahead, carry on.
Anyway, because I am just an eternally curious person. I want to find out, will Elon get to the moon, Mars? Will, what happens in, all these great, what happens with technology? Will we ever get back to having a supersonic aircraft? Will I ever be able to afford a semi-automatic one?
But we don't know that the ghosts can see the future. We only know nothing.
No, but they hang around. They do in the movies and on television.
Well, it depends what movie, what television.
Look at all the ghosts in the BBC series, in documentary series, ghosts. Where that couple, what's the word? Inherit a haunted house with ghosts.
Really?
The ghosts learn how to use computers, and the ghosts learn how to watch television.
Oh, yeah, the movie, the comedy ghosts.
Well, I thought it was a documentary.
Oh yeah, that one. It is a comedy.
Oh, documentary. I thought it was a documentary.
Yeah, it is. Speaking of documentaries, you did you ever see, what the heck's the name of it? The Mermaid's Body or something like that? I forget it was.
No.
It was a probably the most well done. You know how we've had other ones, you know, like the hidden people find, you know, camera footage, lost footage, and, you know, that type of stuff. But this was like a documentary. They, you know, it was OSHA. It was, you know, lots of stories, some sightings around the world, mm-hmm. and how these scientists, OSHA scientists, were being hushed up because they had found evidence that mermaids exist. And the whole thing was done so freaking good. And you wouldn't know it, but
Ron, that was a Marvel movie, Merman.
This is a mockumentary. It was freaking awesome. You wouldn't know it was really a mockumentary till like the end, or if you saw it in the very, very beginning, because it was done so freaking well, like a true documentary is done.
But those documentaries, mockumentaries, as done by Discovery Channel,
this is from the Animals, which is the same group.
Yeah, well, they've actually been taken as real. Do you remember the ones they did during Shark Week on? that one. What's that bloody shark called now?
I don't know.
It's one so with big, the giant one. The
megalith or megathon.
Megalodon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they spoofed up some footage of a German U-boat and an Ursea rescue and another shark bitten in half, or a whale bitten in half. And it was part of the what if the megalodon existed in the oceans today.
Yeah.
Shark Week documentary. The amount of times excerpts from that documentary have been posted online as real, you know, found footage or camera captures. Can people be that gullible?
Well, they can.
But you and I have seen a mermaid, a real mermaid.
We did.
We went up to Portland. Lauren Coleman.
What's his name?
Lauren Coleman.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a mermaid.
Cryptozoology. I think that was the Fuji Mary or a copy of the Fuji Mary mermaid, which was a well done piece, by the way. So.
And there was a Sasquatch.
Yeah, Sasquatch. Yeah. Well, that was you, but
no, I was photographed in front of the Sasquatch, but trying to get the Sasquatch to stay still to have its photograph taken while it was running around serving coffee.
Yeah. Whatever. Well, it's a little maid's outfit.
Oh. Yeah.
Huh? What?
That's it. They come over the border and they get a job.
Yep, there you go. Anyway.
Yeah, so you and I have seen a mermaid. But that is do you know what? When we first went there, we're talking about Lauren Coleman's Cryptozoology Museum in Portland, Maine.
And if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's a fun museum.
Yeah, but when you first arrive there, it's like kind of not what you're expecting. It's in a very modern building, isn't it?
It was behind a hamburger joint?
Yeah, and you think, this isn't kind of what I was expecting. And then you go in, and there's all this cool stuff.
It's not big. Let's tell everybody.
It's not big. Well, the Sasquatch was big. But they've got, like, lots of Yeti footprints and Yeti hair and mermaids and all sorts of really weird, wacky stuff.
Yeah.
And it was a very cool place.
But it was reasonable.
I kept getting distracted by PV's Air Force Base over the road.
I know. It was like, if I remember, I think it was like $10 when we went. I don't know what it is now, but that was a reasonable price. And, you know, you went in. It was, like I said, a small museum, but it was fun. It was really a fun experience to see. So there you go.
Yeah, it was very good. And is it Pease Air Force Base just over the way?
Yeah,
that was cool. That was cool too.
Yeah. So I was reading again.
Oh God.
And I never realized that Winston Churchill was so much into the psychics, into the paranormal.
Was he?
Yeah. I've got all these stories about him.
Oh, go ahead then. Enlighten me.
Okay. I don't want to go into the history of who he was and all that stuff.
It's the greatest British politician ever lived.
Churchill's political... Well, I thought it was Iron Pants, but I could be wrong.
He kept World War II going so that the Americans could eventually arrive.
Yeah, you know, that was nice of him. We appreciate it. They signed off of Portsmouth.
Yeah, well, we did that in World War I as well, didn't we?
Yeah, I know. Good relationship with you chaps.
Yeah, well, you know, you lot take so long to get here that we learned how to keep the thing going.
You know, we got to get
what was that famous song? And we won't be there till it's almost over there.
Okay, if you say so. So anyways, Churchill's political career is well known, but is less known is his interest in the psychic matters. And the
sidetracking for a moment. You know how the US was late to World War I and then late again in World War II?
Yeah.
Do you think that's why they've been so determined ever since to start the next one? Get in early.
Yeah, we'd always do good after a while, don't you notice that?
Well, maybe you shouldn't re-elect Trump.
And you know, the interesting thing, well, Biden's more of a hawk than Trump is, right? Sorry.
Well, I mean, Trump is unique. I mean, what, the first U.S. president since World War II not to start a war?
Yeah. So, anyways, the thing is...
Anyway, moving on. Yeah, Winston Churchill.
You brought it up. It's like...
Half American.
People want to go to war with us because, you know, afterwards, when we beat the shit out of them, we build their country up. Look at Japan and Korea and
Germany,
Vietnam and Philippines.
Yeah.
Grenada.
I don't think Noriega would agree.
Noriega is not Grenada.
He's doing time now, isn't he?
Yeah, we took him in the prison. We had to go get him. But anyway, where was I?
Actually, there's an interesting analogy there because Churchill's mother was an American.
Yes.
And so he was half American and entitled to have an American passport. What a lot of people don't realize is Donald Trump is half British and entitled to have a British passport because his mother is Scottish.
Yeah. I thought I was going to say he's not British, he's Scottish.
Scotland is part of Britain.
Well, only in your eyes, not in Scottish eyes.
Well, not in Stephen Scott's eyes, but... but then they're stuck with the SNP. I hope he's listening.
Yeah.
You got what you wanted, Steve.
Anyway.
Jimmy Cranky. She's gone now, though. Yes, you've got Hamza Youssef and the hate bill. Do you know it's illegal in Scotland now to say anything mean or nasty about anybody?
Oh, that's
even
nice.
Online. No, you're not allowed to say anything at all that's mean or nasty.
They can't stop me. I'm in America.
Because the police will come round and take you away.
Come and get me. I'm here in America. I'll give you my address. Come to the love shack and we'll...
You do know that Britain has an extradition order with...
That's fine.
Actually, it'd be the only way they'd get you across here, the extradite you.
That's what I was thinking. I could, you know, and then when I go over there and I win my case and I do the 2 minutes in jail that they give out in sentences over there, I could go and do my thing up there. And it would cost me free to be brought over, so you can't beat that.
No, but then the Brits would charge you.
They can't charge me.
Nothing's free in Britain.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, can we talk about Winston Churchill?
Yeah, go ahead.
He was your prime minister, by the way.
He was twice.
Yeah, okay. So, Churchill's political career is well known, but lesser known is his interest in psychic matters and the many incidents that occurred throughout his life. In 1940, when Churchill had just been selected as the new prime minister, he addressed the nation on radio where he referred to Britain's physical energy and psychic strength. In the middle of World War II, he said, "Oh, faith in life and after death in bright world where dear ones will meet you again." See? And only that, And only that and that measure tramped by the time of can give consolation. So, after, you know, basically.
You know, he was renowned for his public speaking ability.
He was.
And his oration.
Hmm.
Bit like you.
Yeah, I've been known for my public speaking. Yeah.
And oration.
In his early years, Churchill experimented with automatic writing. If you don't know what automatic writing is, that's at the time. Did they use
I know what it is. Keep going.
I'm asking a question. At the time in Britain, was that with the planchette, or was it just through, you know, trance?
Both methods were in use, and okay. long before the 1940s.
Okay, I was just curious which one it is. As he described it,
and then we invented the typewriter.
Yeah. Okay. So it's without the planchette. As he described it, as he held a pencil and written while others touched my wrist and hand, I acted in exactly the same uncontrollable, unconscious manner now. So that's how he referred to that.
But that doesn't necessarily mean, though, that spirits are guiding it. That could be subconscious.
No,
you want to say
that about Winston Churchill. If you have people, you're more than welcome to call him a liar. That's fine.
I'm not calling him a liar. What I'm saying is he notably struggled over, he was a perfectionist who wanted to get his speech writing absolutely right. You know, his very famous speeches, he worked on them. He would stay in bed till the middle part of the day. And then he would get up and have a long, long bath and dictate to his secretary and constantly work on the script of his speeches that he was going to make later on in Parliament or on the radio.
Yeah.
And not just Churchill, but several politicians and leaders said that the actual speech came to them by way of a dream, a subconscious thought, whilst the pencil was resting on the paper or the fingers were hovering over the keyboard.
See, look at that.
So are you saying that, you know, it might be interpreted as derived of the spirits or automatic writing? But I think there is a strong argument that it's really coming from the subconscious.
Okay.
Trying to say what it is that needs to be said. And in fact, you know that I've been writing Paravision for the last forever.
300 years, yeah.
It feels like it. And there are days when nothing happens, and there are days when...
Kel does something.
No. There are days when I'm doing something entirely different, and then all of a sudden I get the sentence that's been eluding me, and then everything just flows from there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm not really consciously thinking about what's being written. I'm just bashing out the words on the computer and it's just flowing together nicely. And I think that kind of that's what Churchill might be referring to.
I don't know. I think you probably got your...
am I overthinking this again now?
I think you probably got a COVID shot and the government had put an AI chip in you. And so it was really the government that was writing that.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Well, that's another theory.
So you overlook the flat earth. They don't want you to know about. So did you know that Winston Churchill was in the Boer War?
Yes.
Yeah. He was actually taken prisoner.
He was.
He referred to his escape as a... here it is. This refers to his escape as being prisoner of the Boers in Pretoria during the Boer War. He broke free from his captors and hid aboard a train and jumped off into unknown territory, not knowing whether or not to trust the people he met in, holy crap, Caral, whatever the hell that is. He relied on his psychic instincts and went straight to one particular house. It turns out that is the only house in that whole area that was sympathetic to the British. So he used his psychic powers to find that house.
Did he write that?
No, he didn't write that.
Well, so somebody...
He said this. Well, he told someone this.
Did he?
Yeah. That's what it says.
Well, you know, that's actually quite a famous story of Churchill. And it was in all of the boys' own books when I was growing up about how he escaped from the South African prison camp, the Boer prison camp at Pretoria. And then how he jumped from a train and then he went to a house. I've never seen any mention of him using psychic ability.
Just saying which.
Didn't make it into the boys' own stories.
You know, that's the government story, probably.
Well, it was.
This is the story behind this story.
Okay.
However, okay, there's more to this. All right, that, you know, this is the psychic powers. The Baroness, oh my God, Asquith? A-S-Q-I-T-H?
Asquith.
Oh. Asquith revealed that Churchill made a number of predictions in the 1920s and 30s, and that they had come true. In 1925, Churchill saw the future with a H-bomb radar and a V-1 and V-2 missiles. This was in 1925. He said, this is a quote, "May there not be methods of using these explosive energy more intense than anything else yet discovered. Might not a bomb no bigger than a orange be found to possess the secret power to concentrate the force of 1,000 tons of cordite?
Yeah.
Could not explosives be guided by automatically flying machines by wireless or other rays without a human pilot?"
I don't see that as a psychic prediction at all.
Okay, if you say so.
What Churchill is really saying there, and it's not a psychic prediction because
this
at
is
that
1925,
time,
long before
time,
B1s,
at that
B2s,
time,
and the H-bomb.
At that time in Britain and Europe, there were already people like Ernest Rutherford and others who were working on theoretical atomic physics and had already postulated the idea of using atomic weapons and the explosive forces that were contained within them. Moreover, in the 1920s, there were already experiments being conducted with independently wirelessly controlled aircraft. And this one of the most famous, of course, was the de Havilland Queen Bee, which was a off-the-shelf Tiger Moth biplane that was fitted with radio controls and then was flown up and down so that the guns could shoot at it.
By the Americans.
Actually, no, the Queen Bee was a British invention, but yeah, we'll let that one
just
slide.
Stole the plants from the Americans. They're fine enough. That's whatever.
Yeah, okay. Like you invented the Harrier and okay.
Yeah, we like the Harrier.
Yeah. Anyway,
all
of that technology was well known in the 1920s. I think what Churchill is saying is far-sighted, and as he said after the fall, or immediately after the end of World War II, in the famous Iron Curtain speech, long before the Cold War developed, he was a highly intelligent man. And he could see the way that things were progressing. And what he's saying in that speech that you just read to me is...
Attempted to read.
I hope that these technologies that I know about, because he was Minister of the Navy, he was Minister for War, he was very well connected. He knew Rutherford and the others. He knew what was going on, and he knew what people were working towards. So this isn't psychic predictions. This is farsightedness, exactly as he did at the end of World War II when he said, an iron curtain will descend, will fall across Europe from Stettin in the east, the steppes in the east to Stettin in the, wherever it was, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And he actually, that's why we have to turn the iron curtain, because he said an iron curtain will descend across Europe.
Okay. But there's more.
It's okay. Farsightedness. That's not psychic.
Yeah. Churchill made a habit of visiting anti-aircraft gun sites.
Yes, he did.
At night. During the height of the London Blitz. Once he was at a site in Richmond, and he was preparing to leave. Normally, he sat on the left side of the car in which he traveled. This time, for no apparent reason, he walked around and got on to the right side. On the way back to London, a bomb fell near the car. If he had been sitting in his usual spot, the car undoubtedly would have turned over. But the extra weight on the far side tipped up on two wheels, but his portly self, it appeared, and this is his quote, it appeared to me I was told I was meant to open the door on the other side of the car and get in there. And that's what I did. So that was his direct quote.
Yeah.
I so psychic power.
That's not psychic power.
Of course it is.
No, it's not.
What is it?
Why is that psychic power? How many times?
Because you do the same thing. Most people are creatures of habit.
Creatures of habit, but they do occasionally do something different.
But why do they do something different? Is that because of some particular psychic reason?
Well, people might argue that's the case. It could just be he fancied a change of scenery. It could just be that the view out of the left-hand window was better than the view out of the right time. Right.
It could have been. He traveled many times. It would be the same.
Could have been as simple as there was a puddle on the road and he didn't want to get his shoes wet, so he went round to the other side of the car.
Give me a break. Oh, we got to take a break. So that was 2 minutes, went very fast. All of a sudden, we got the tune. So I'm not sure.
I'm sure Churchill predicted that.
Well, I didn't. That's for damn sure. Oh, wait a minute. We got more typing. I don't know if the tunes are coming or not. Anyways, you're listening to Ghost Chronicles International right here on TojiNet Radio.
Come on, I want to get to Illinois where nothing happens.
Welcome to TojiNet Radio with a cutting edge.
Do you have a paranormal event, book, or something else you want people to know about? Then why not advertise it on Ghost Chronicles Radio? With over 150,000 downloads a month, get your message out to an audience that's interested in the subject. We have a plan at a cost that fits your needs. For more information, contact Ron Kolick at anyghostproject@comcast.net or call 978-455-6678.
Located in Illinois, there lies a sleepy little town where nothing is a common occurrence.
You going to that party in town tonight?
Heck yeah! I only turned 18 once.
That is until the night of celebration.
Where the hell is she? Oh no. No, 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 Jessica!
What's happening?
From the creators of Shadowhunters, Bite Me, comes a tale of primal terror and grindcore mayhem. Shadowhunters, kill Jessica, kill!
Well, I don't know what happens in Illinois, but that would never happen in Texas.
Or UK.
Oh, driving around in pickup trucks with gun racks. That could never happen in Texas.
Yeah, but do they have silver bullets?
Or ghost bullets?
Or ghost bullets.
I still want to move to Texas.
Should we move away? So, like, could you get, like, wooden bullets to kill vampires?
Meat bullets. Meat.
Drive straight to their heart, right? That's wood.
No. Beef steak bullets.
Not beef steak. You eat those.
Well, there you go. Perfect rations, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, who needs an MRE?
Yeah. So you get your bandana with your invisible bullets, your
silver
bullets, and your wooden bullets, and your beef steak bullets.
And your beef steak bullets.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay, fine. And you carry a chicken with you for the Cooper Chaga.
Carry a chicken. You can do the voodoo as well.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, you get that too.
Yeah, you can do voodoo. Mm.
So anyways, there's more.
Just out of curiosity, what exactly is the title of the book you're reading?
Wait a minute. When I'm done, I'm going to give you all the sources of this. Let me finish. It's only like a paragraph of the list. Okay. Well,
is it written in crayon?
No, it's not written in crayon. It's
just checking.
What do you think? I'm not sure. One October, he was dining in Downing Street. You know what Downing Street is, Steve?
Yes.
When the air sirens sounded.
Sorry, the what?
Air sirens.
Sirens.
Yeah, whatever.
We don't have sirens.
You had sirens. That's, you just
we don't have sirens. We have sirens.
You speak funny over there. He had a flash of an inspiration.
Okay.
He later said that in his mind, he saw a 25-foot-high plate glass window in the kitchen being blown apart. He summoned the butler and had all the staff taken to the shelter. Within minutes, a bomb fell nearby, shattering the window, destroying the kitchen, and sending huge shards of glass everywhere in the area. At the end of the war in 1945, he was confident of his re-election. He awoke in a deep sleep within sudden conviction that he would not continue as prime minister. The next morning, the results were confirmed. He didn't get it. So he predicted his own demise.
No, he didn't.
Yes. It just says
no,
this.
He didn't.
I read it.
It was quite well known before the 1945 election, general election in Britain, that the Labour Party were going to come to power. It was quite well known. The papers had been predicting it for a number of days.
But Churchill was confident.
I think what Churchill woke up in the middle of the night with a sudden, cold, clammy realisation that he was... that he wasn't going to be the Prime Minister the next day. I would have given it if he said, and then he rolled over, went back to sleep because he realized he would be the prime minister in 5 years' time.
Ah.
When he was re-elected.
Well, he probably didn't. He woke up and didn't go back to sleep. That was the problem. If he went back to sleep, he would have known that.
What is it you're reading?
I'm done. I went one more paragraph, and this is the coup d'etat. It's like
okay. Pacific. All right, go on then.
In his retirement, Churchill was working from a photograph and painting a portrait of his deceased father. Suddenly, his father appeared sitting in a nearby leather chair. Churchill said that they had a great, good conversation, discussion politics and the changes that would occur over the years. So he saw his dead father. He came back. Not only just saw him, he had a conversation with him.
Well, there you go.
So there you go.
What does that prove?
And wait a minute. There's more to this. He had more when he was at the White House visiting. He was taking a bath, and who walked
in?
He did see
a ghost in the White House.
Ah, you finally admit it. Okay, I rest my case.
He did. report seeing a ghost at the White House. That bit is true.
This whole thing is true. You confirmed it all along the way. You just interpreted it differently.
No.
Yes.
I don't think you've made a very strong case for Churchill being psychic.
All right. So let's see where the source of this information is.
Yeah, go on then.
Okay. It is Winston Churchill, The Second World War, 6 volumes, 1948 to 1954, by Houghton Mifflin. It's a publishing, one of the biggest publishing companies at the time.
Yeah, I've read those volumes.
Okay, so I'm giving you the information. Sue Leonard, Quest for the Unknown, Life Beyond Death. That was in Reader's Digest in 1992.
Yeah, well, I mean, if it's in Reader's Digest, it must be true. I mean, let's be honest, Reader's Digest was the modern equivalent.
Yeah, here
we
go. Might as well tack the sources since you tacked everything else.
I've read Winston Churchill's 6 volumes.
Let me finish. One more source I want to get out here. Tony Ortson, The Psychic Life of Britain's Greatest Prime Minister. Psychic News, number 3729 on December 2003.
Wow.
So there you go. There's your sources. Well, I don't leave this unnaked, you know. I give you my sources.
I'm convinced now.
It should be. Such valuable sources.
I think what you've got there is wishful reinterpretation of fact.
Absolutely.
Narrative. You have. And they've done this about Prince Charles, the royal ghostbuster.
You tell me stories about him. And yeah, there's no documentation of it, but I believed you. And I shouldn't since the episode with the ecto-glasses.
Yeah. The sources were unimpeachable. All of them were British tabloid newspapers, British journalists.
There you go. British tabloid newspapers.
Sources close to the royal family. Sources close to the Prince of Wales.
Mm-hmm. Sources. What sources?
Well, that's all you ever get from the royal family.
See, there you go.
Well, they don't come out and say, oh, I say,
I'm sorry. I mean, you just think. I don't know they said that. I'm just taking somebody's word for it.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Some guy wants to write a book, so he's making stuff up. So, big deal.
I've read Churchill's 6-volume treatise.
You did?
I did.
God bless you.
Many years ago. And I think the other two are just, well, you know, for example, the 1920s. Oh, he was farsighted in making psychic predictions. No, he was well placed to have excellent inside knowledge of advancing technologies.
Right, which is psychic ability.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No,
seeing the future whether is psychic ability.
If he was that good, if Churchill genuinely was psychic, he wouldn't.
So you're saying that psychic ability is absolutely 100%. Then
no, what I'm saying is the article glosses over the fact that Churchill made some spectacular errors of judgment, most notably Gallipoli, where he said we will attack the soft underbelly of.
Oh, that was a bad battle.
Yeah, that was right in his lap. That was his pigeon. And
you got to pin that on him.
And thousands of Anzacs and British troops were slaughtered.
That really sucked.
Yeah, that was Churchill.
So he hadn't quite developed yet, that's all.
Really?
Evidently.
And if you look at if you look at some of the biographies of Churchill, he was very prone to spontaneous outbursts of irrational decision making that then had to be rowed back on.
Oh, of course. I mean, he also drank a lot, if you remember. But Whymperit doesn't.
He did come up with some. He did have some remarkable wit. Some spectacular one-liners.
We could do a show on all his one-liners.
Everybody knows the one about you, sir, are drunk, and you, madam, I shall be sober in the morning.
Mm.
I missed out the middle bit.
That's one of my favorites, too, yeah.
Yeah. But one of my favorites is he was dining at number 10 Downing Street, which is the London residence of the British Prime Minister. It's also where he works from. So it's kind of like the British White House. And he was entertaining the French head of state during the war, who was in exile, General Charles de Gaulle.
Oh, God bless us.
Yes. And after they'd enjoyed the meal and were having brandy and cigars, de Gaulle said to Churchill, "We do not understand why you British, you burn our patron saint, Saint-Jean." And Churchill what? Lowered, "You burnt Joan, we burnt Joan of Arc, didn't we, at the stake?"
Oh, my God.
Well, shut up. We burnt the White House. Well, that's why it's called the White House.
Yeah, so we got over it.
Yeah, so but we burnt the patron saint, Joan of Arc. Mm-hmm. And de Gaulle said, "You know, are you British? You burn our patron saint. Why do you do this?" Yeah. And you've got to imagine Winston. He wore these thin half-frame glass spectacles, and he lowered them, looked over the top of them, and said, "We were cold."
Charles de Gaulle was. I mean, you talk about, you think Gallipoli or whatever the name of that, I can never say that word.
Gallipoli. Was bad.
Yeah, whatever. You think that's bad. I mean, the French commander during World War II was absolutely pathetic. And
I mean, the French have, they've never been exactly great.
What?
Well, you know.
They did beat your ass a couple of times.
When?
Several times over the hundreds of years you two have been going at it.
The last time the French beat us was 1066.
Okay.
And how many times have we had to go over to Europe to save their scabby asses?
Never ours, thank God.
You know, we had to deal with Napoleon.
The French were our friends. What are you talking about? Remember, they helped us kick your ass in the revolution.
Well, yeah, they only helped you because it suited them, because we were in the middle of a war with them at the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, I remember talking to Tom Beardsley, who was the
transplanted Brit.
The transplanted Brit who became the director of the old Mets. In Salem. No, not Salem.
Concord.
And I honestly didn't understand much about the Revolutionary War because it's not taught in school here in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
We focus on our minor differences.
Any one of the other wars that you've fought.
With the French, the Spanish, the Prussians.
The
Russians. Anybody and everybody.
The Boers, the Chinese,
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Carry on.
Anyway, so I asked Tom if he could recommend me a good book, and he found me, he generously gave me a book to read about the Revolutionary War. Mm-hmm. And I never realized, I always thought that the Americans won the Revolutionary War.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize that actually you didn't. We lost it.
Here we go. Go ahead. Keep going.
No, I'm just saying, because
you say so.
And the reason we lost it was for two reasons. One, the French, who would knife the English in the back at any opportunity.
You've been going at it for thousands of years.
Not thousands.
I know, but it seems like it.
Yeah. And two, typically British muck up, screw up. Because the British Admiral in charge of the Royal Navy and the British General in charge of the British Land Army in North America were brothers who hated one another.
Yep.
And so when the army got itself into Chesapeake Bay and a bit stuck, then that's why the Navy didn't come to save them.
Mm.
Because these two brothers hated one another.
Step up a limb.
Yeah. It's like the World Cup. It's like soccer, or as you Americans insist on calling it, football.
Yeah. No, we call it soccer because we have real football.
Yeah, it's so real. The men have to wear armor. Anyway, what was he going to say?
I have no idea.
Oh yeah, we invent this game, like where people run around and kick balls, and we, you know. And then every country in the world comes and beats us.
Mm. Wales went pretty far that last time, if I remember, didn't they?
I'm not Welsh.
Oh. But that's part of Britain, right?
No, Wales have just been kicked out of the World Cup again.
Again?
Again. They didn't get through to the finals.
That's a shame.
Again.
Again. Oh, well, it's usually the Spanish country. Although the Italians do get this much here, too, and that.
Well, look how the Brits always lose stuff. We start every war with a defeat.
Mm.
I mean, that's kind of a tradition.
Get everybody motivated.
Well, that's kind of a tradition. It kind of wrong-foots the enemy and gives them a false sense of security. But, you know, like, First World War, 1914, you know, the retreat from Mons, like, run away! And the Germans are all over us, and we're pushed all the way back. And then we win. And 1940 comes around, and we're on the beach.
The angel saved your butt.
And we're down on the beaches, making sandcastles, enjoying the sunshine. Mm. And all the little boats come, and then we all come home, and then we all go back.
Yeah, didn't the Americans come save your ass, and everything's good?
Yeah, well, it's back to what we said at the start of the show. We did have to hold the fort for a couple of years.
Well, it takes us a while. We just don't like rushing into things really quickly. Take the glory.
Yeah. You do it so well.
I know. So on a serious note.
On a serious note, I do not believe Winston Churchill knew many eminent spiritualists. And in fact, if you had suggested at the start of the show that one of our greatest wartime leaders was a confirmed and resolute spiritualist, I would have agreed with you, because one in particular was the
Queen.
The
Queen was.
The head of fighter command during the Battle of Britain.
Oh, was he?
Yes. He was a confirmed spiritualist who, because as soon as he won the Battle of Britain, we retired him. Yeah, really? That's the Britain for you. Yeah. I mean, he just won the Battle of Britain. He'd staved off the entire Luftwaffe. So we retired him.
Didn't you do the same guy that broke the code, right? The Enigma thing? You come up with that computer thing?
They threw him in jail and chemically castrated him.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, you know.
Yeah, yeah, we're just ungrateful. Mm. Anyway, he, the chief of fighter command, was, he wrote numerous books on the subject of Dowding. Dowding was his name, Chief Marshal Dowding, on spiritualism and how he communicated with his boys, the fighter pilots who had died during the Battle of Britain. Mm-hmm. And he went, you know, on after his retirement through to the 1950s, writing spiritualist books, writing articles, giving lectures and presentations on spiritualism. Dowding was a confirmed spiritualist, and that predates his time as, you know, the very innovative head of fighter command. And it was Dowding primarily was the reason that we won, because he backed radar. And he said, look, we've only got 600 planes and the Germans have got 2,500 planes, but we've got radar and we know where the bastards are coming from and where they'll be, so we can send our aircraft to be in the right place at the right time and chase them home again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we won the Battle of Britain. But Dowding was absolutely a spiritualist and went to many mediums, and his wife, Lady Dowding, was also a member of the spiritualist movement.
Hmm.
Unlike Churchill.
Right.
I don't believe, I think what you've got there is Churchill's memoirs, which are true and accurate events. And on one occasion, he may have decided, I think I'll go to that house, and got lucky. And another occasion, he thought, you know what, I'm going to go around that side of the car, and got lucky. That happens in everyday life to every person.
Have you been talking to Joe Nickel again?
Seriously, how many times?
Randy?
Are you saying that the bloke who woke up late on 9/11 and said, I'll phone in sick today because I've overslept?
Divine intervention. We all know that.
It may be divine intervention, or it may just be a lucky call.
Or is it? Or was then what you've got later ability?
What you've got later then is authors trying to push the psychic narrative, making hay Churchill, foresaw the V1 and the V2 and orange sized atomic bombs. Mm-hmm. He didn't. He knew about them. Mm-hmm. He knew that they were possible, and he actually said, God, I hope that they're not.
Okay. That's what you believe. You're entitled to your beliefs. We all know that. It's a free country, free air. Speak your beliefs.
And not in this country, it's not.
So anyways, that's a little thing on Sir Winston Churchill. Was he psychic?
Well, no.
That's up for you to decide. That's not for me. I just a messenger. That's all I can say.
Shoot,
I give
the
you the information. You make up your own mind. Unlike some people who have closed minds.
Who are those people that have, how dare people have closed minds?
I don't know. So I actually have a serious thing I'd like to ask you about.
Go on then.
So can I do it?
Go on then.
Okay. This is actually a letter that was written to Dear Abby. Okay. You know who Dear Abby is? Do you know who Dear Abby is?
For the sake of we're running out of time, I'll say yes.
Okay, Dear Abby, she just writes, her two sisters, they write advice column in a paper. Okay.
I kind of thought that was the
doctor thing. All right. So this is a letter. He says, I need a second opinion. My grandfather sold me an old farmstead that he had been in the family for the last 200 years. Last week, he showed me a wooded area behind the barn with a human skull. He told me that that when his father died, that would be his great-grandfather, more than 50 years ago, he was curious about what would happen to a body if it was left to decompose. So he left it in the woods, and he tracked the progress over the next 50 years. Spent 50 years worth of pictures and notes, and so that's what happened. So this guy here, all that was left, it was a skull. It's a long letter, so I was trying to jump over a little bit. I checked with the lawyer, and it tells me that the state has no laws that were broken during this. But the guy feels a lot of shame in this, and he's wondering what he should do with the skull and if he should burn the father's notes and pictures. So I want to know, what is your thoughts on this?
Is it the FBI? Don't they have a lab at, is it in Georgia or one of the Carolinas?
The farm.
Where they lay out bodies and then watch them and video them.
They have them in the woods. They bury bodies in the woods, a corpse farm.
Yeah, so they can understand how these things happen.
Exactly.
I think this far-sighted farm should be applauded.
Okay. So Steve, well, we're running out of time, evidently, but I absolutely agree with you on that, is that, you know, people say, oh, this is was terrible, everything. Well, not necessarily. No. And the guys, to think the guy would burn 50 years worth of his grandfather's research.
That's outrageous behavior. That research should be donated to a medical research institute for the archives.
Right, or even the crime lab or the FBI.
Yeah,
quite frankly.
Exactly. Exactly.
So we are in the same place. Like, yeah.
Of course we are.
The guy wasn't a pervert, was he?
Not in the slightest.
No, he was curious. It's what we are. All are curious. Well, you and I are.
He broke no laws. He conducted
how things work.
He broke no laws. He conducted a proper experiment.
His father was dead. It was his father, by the way.
No, I mean, his father conducted a very good experiment. He documented it and he recorded the results, and they deserve to be properly archived and his...
Definitely saved.
Yeah, absolutely saved.
50 years, think of that.
What did Abby say?
Oh, God, we ran out of time. We got about a minute left. She said,
Burn them!
Your letters of prayers. Why did you get the impression that your grandfather hated his father and treated his remains with disrespect? The farmstead and everything goes with it is not all yours to keep them disposed of. What you need to do is decide whether to donate your grandfather's skull and medical information to a, you know, that it tells you a bunch of places. We do got to go. Anyways, you've been listening to Ghost Chronicles International, where we talked about the psychic life of Winston Churchill, or did we? Stay tuned for Ghost Chronicles Next Generation, brought to you by Circles of Wisdom, 286 Merrick Street, Methuen, Massachusetts, the Glatt Messier Family Law Group, 15 High Street, not the Andover, Massachusetts, and our very, very good friends on Ghost Chronicle Radios on Patreon. Good night, everyone, and if you were offended by this show, I'm sorry.
And next week, we're going to be doing the dream life of Joe Biden.
Are we really?
Yeah, easily. Dream world.
Right, we got to go.
Good night.
Yes, everyone. God bless.
Ghoulies to ghosties, long leggedy beasties, and things that go bump in the night. Deliver us, good Lord.